This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
It's time for Entertainment Weekly, covering celebrity interviews, Broadway theater, movie reviews, popular culture, and much more. Entertainment Weekly offers fun and unparalleled access to Hollywood's most creative minds and fascinating stars. Now, on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm your reader, Judy, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from EW.com. 2025, Meredith Publishing. And now I'll begin with the first article written by Joey Nolfi, which is titled, Mariah Carey Shades Grammys Because She Hasn't Won More Awards. She says, went through a lot with that. And the article begins, Mariah Carey has many things, the record for most number one singles by a solo artist, an assistant who brushes her hair on roller coasters, and a penchant for, allegedly, not knowing Jennifer Lopez. And yet she still doesn't have enough Grammys, the legendary singer-songwriter suggested in a recent interview for her new album titled Here for It All. Appearing on the show Live with Kelly and Mark, the elusive chanteuse, who famously does not acknowledge the passing of time, reflected on her history with the Recording Academy that has, to date, only resulted in 5 competitive Grammys. She also received the special Grammy Global Impact Award in 2024. You're such a Grammy winner, Kelly Ripa said at the top of the interview, a sentiment at which Carey immediately balked. Not really. They pushed me out of the... Carey said, trailing off as the audience applauded. I mean, I'm not being politically correct about it because I really went through a lot with that. Ripa asked, so you should have more? To which Carey replied, I was nominated years ago for almost every category, the year we had One Sweet Day with Boys to Men and Always Be My Baby Fantasy. A shocked Ripa again inquired, you didn't win Grammys for those? With Carey applying, no, and I was there. We opened the show. Yeah, so we just sat there like, yay. Still, Mark Consuelos pointed out that Carey just won awards at the 2025 MTV Video Music Awards, including the Video Vanguard Award for Career Excellence in Music Videos. Let's just say yay for the Grammys. Yay, yay, Grammys, woo, Carey said, clapping after celebrating her VMA's victories. And we love them. To date, Carey has amassed 34 Grammy nominations across her 3-decade-plus career. She won Best Pop Vocal Performance for Vision of Love and Best New Artist in 1991, and in 2006, she took home Best Contemporary R&B Album, titled The Emancipation of Mimi, and Best R&B Song and Best Female R&B Vocal Performance for We Belong Together. In 1996, she had 6 nominations, including Album of the Year for Daydream, which yielded the number one hit Fantasy, One Sweet Day, and Always Be My Baby. Well, this is not the first time Carey has shaded the Grammys. During her appearance on Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers' Las Culturistas podcast last year, Rogers, a devoted lamb, told the singer of her Grammy haul, you don't have enough of those, by the way. They scammed me, Carey replied. They toy with me. Though she's released several albums since her last win, Carey hasn't received a Grammy nomination in 16 years when she was up for Best Gospel Performance in 2009 for I Understand, her collaboration with Kim Burrell, Rance Allen, and Baby Winans. Still, Carey remains a viable pop culture force with her perennial holiday hit, All I Want for Christmas Is You, regularly soaring up the charts at the end of every calendar year. The single, which was originally released in 1994, didn't reach the number one spot on the Billboard Hot 100 until 2019, 25 years after its initial bow. Carrie recently scored another solo entry on the Billboard Hot 100 with the release of Type Dangerous, the lead single for her new album, Here for It All, which drops on Friday, September 26th. The next article by Deja Tolentino is titled, Amy Poehler Blasts Oscars for Major Snub. It's some hot bullcrap, she says. And the article begins. Amy Poehler has some choice words for the Academy after seeing comedies get snubbed at the Oscars year after year. It's some hot bullcrap because comedy is not easy, she said on a recent episode of her podcast called Good Hang. The Saturday Night Live alum spoke to the Roses stars Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman about their new dark comedy. When speaking to the Doctor Strange star at the top of the show, she commended him and Colman for being able to switch between comedies and dramas. It's very hard to pull off both physical comedy and really like sharp and sarcastic wit, Poehler said. Both of those things are hard to do well. The Parks and Recreation actress said that all the serious people accept awards at the Oscars every year. Cumberbatch agreed that comedies rarely get their due awards. If you can do comedy, that's my point. You can do anything, the Avengers Endgame actor said. Some big winners at the Oscars in recent years have had comedic elements to them, such as Best Picture recipients Anora and Everything Everywhere All at Once. However, straightforward comedies rarely take home the top prizes. Notably, Colman won Best Actress at the 91st Academy Awards in 2019 for her role as the bumbling Queen Anne in The Favourite. The next article is titled, Emmys, Snubs and Surprises, What We Got Right and Wrong and What We Really Thought About the Golden Girls Tribute. This article is written by Jared Hall, and it begins, The 2025 Emmys are one for the history books, in more ways than one. Severance star Tramell Tillman became the first black person to win in the supporting drama actor category, and the studio broke the Bears' record to win the most Emmys for a comedy series in a single year with 13. But it was also the year we thought we'd see Kathy Bates and Harrison Ford take the stage to accept Emmy statuettes for their performances on Matlock and Shrinking, respectively. They were our picks to win. Alas, we got it wrong. And that's okay, because Emmy voters went with some surprises in the lead drama actress and supporting comedy actor categories, opting for Severance's Britt Lower and Somebody Somewhere's Jeff Hiller. EW critic Kristen Baldwin has long said that Hiller should win this one, so talk about manifesting. Now, if you go back and watch, you see what they do, the shots of the nominees in boxes as the winner is announced. Colman Domingo, Bowen Yang, and Michael Urey, Jeff's three gay peers, they all are thrilled. They look more excited than he does, Kristen says on the latest episode of the Awardist podcast about Hiller's big win. It was so sweet, she says. And then there are those wins for Andor and Slow Horses in the drama writing and directing categories. A surprise even to those winners who, like so many of us, expected Severance or The Pitt to take home those trophies. Now, is that vote splitting at its finest? But perhaps the ultimate snub was to the Golden Girls. The night the Emmys were on marked the 40th anniversary of the debut of the beloved sitcom, which scored 46 Emmy nominations over the course of its 7 seasons and winning 8. But you wouldn't know it from the tribute, which was comprised of country superstar Reba McEntire, joined by Little Big Town's Karen Fairchild and Kimberly Schlappman, who led a performance of the show's iconic theme song from a recreation of the famous kitchen set. But no clips, no mention of its 4 Emmy-winning stars? They deserved better. Look, these are all professional singers, but it did seem a little messy. It seemed like they maybe didn't get too much time to rehearse, Kristen says of the tribute, which made her list of worst moments of the ceremony. And as if it wasn't bad enough that Bea Arthur, Estelle Getty, Rue McClanahan, and Betty White weren't even mentioned, nor did they mention the name of the woman who freaking created the show and is still alive, Susan Harris. It was so weird. They did this very showy tribute, but it was more about the people participating in the tribute than it was about the show. Do something resembling anything. Instead, it was a weird pageant that had no point. The next article is titled, William Shatner Gives Health Update After Reported Hospitalization. He says, I overindulged. This article is written by Shania Russell, and it begins, William Shatner is urging fans to calm down following reports that he was hospitalized for a medical emergency. In a morning Instagram post, the 94-year-old Star Trek alum shared a mustachioed photo of his face emblazoned with the words, Rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. He also offered some reassurances in the caption, writing, I overindulged. I thank you for caring, but I'm perfectly fine. I keep telling you all, don't trust tabloids or AI. Shatner's post comes hours after TMZ reported that the actor had been rushed to the hospital on September 24th after suffering a medical emergency. The outlet wrote that per Shatner's agent, Harry Gold, he experienced an issue with his blood sugar while in his Los Angeles home and called emergency service workers as a precaution. He was then transported to a local hospital where he was checked out before being sent home. Shatner, known for helming Starship Enterprise as Captain James T. Kirk, famously keeps an active lifestyle despite his age. In 2021, he made history as the oldest man ever to go into space when he flew on Blue Origin's NS-18 mission at the age of 90. He has also continued to keep busy with various Hollywood projects, including several voice roles and a brief stint on The Masked Singer. In 2023, Shatner narrated You Can Call Me Bill, a documentary about his life. And speaking to Variety about his motivation behind the project, Shatner said it was not the first time the idea had arisen and explained why he finally felt it was time to say yes. I've turned down a lot of offers to do documentaries before, but I don't have long to live, said Shatner. Whether I keel over as I'm speaking to you or 10 years from now, my time is limited, so that's very much a factor. I've got grandchildren. This documentary is a way of reaching out after I die. Shatner will next appear in Family Tree, a holiday set dramedy which he created and stars in with Tom Bergeron. The next article, written by Joey Nolfi, is titled, Whoopi Goldberg calls out The View crew member over tech issue after mocking fellow ABC show The Golden Bachelor. And this article begins, Please, for the love of Sister Mary Clarence, do not force Whoopi Goldberg to talk about The Golden Bachelor at The View's Hot Topics table. Upon returning from a commercial break on Thursday morning, the Oscar-winning ghost actress and Sister Act star expressed her apparent disinterest in discussing the reality dating show, which also airs on The View's parent network, ABC. And this is really important that you all be aware of, Goldberg said, before pretending to cry as she feigned concern over communicating details about the show to a chuckling View studio audience. The Golden Bachelor premiered last night, and the women took him to task over the list of requirements he laid out months ago on a podcast. Take a look, the 69-year-old said before the show played a clip of the dater, Mel Owens, stating his preference to date women in the 45 to 60-year age range. When the clip ended, Goldberg addressed a prior issue with the show's prompter. "So I have to tell you, I misread what I saw, so I'm going to read what it says," she said, before attempting to read new text. Why did you change it?" Goldberg said, pausing to look off camera at a crew member. "You changed the text on her?" conservative co-host Alyssa Fair Griffin said through laughter, while Joy Behar attempted to help Goldberg by reading the text for her. No, I see what it actually is. That's not what I saw originally," Goldberg clarified, before asking her co-host to weigh in with a proper prompt, saying, "Did he redeem himself?" Griffin pushed back against Owen's words while Goldberg eventually summed it up herself. She said, "I find it very, very crazy that at this point people are still making those kinds of comments and saying them out loud. I mean, you find it where you find it. It might be somebody who is a little bit older than you. It might be somebody who's younger than you. Why not just say, I want to find somebody who fits with me and I fit with, as opposed to, they have to be this?" Goldberg then prompted the show to go to commercial as she got up from the Hot Topics table to retrieve a note card she accidentally dropped on the floor. Now, this Thursday's episode wasn't the first time a View co-host has trashed a fellow ABC project. Goldberg famously said in 2023 that the network's American Idol marked the beginning of the downfall of society when it premiered on Fox in 2002. Anna Navarro often voices opposition to the Bachelor franchise, even telling the Golden Bachelorette star Joan Vassos on the air during an interview that she feels the show is too corny and scripted. Next, see John Stamos, Weird Al Yankovic, Green Day, and more rocking out at Riot Fest 2025. This article is written by Ben Trivett and begins, "From the basement to the main lounge, the 20th annual Riot Fest did not disappoint this past weekend in Chicago. Headlined by Green Day, Weezer, and Blink 182, the festival, which took place in Douglas Park, also brought an amazing collection of rising artists and fan favorites together. However, one of the most talked about performances was when John Stamos, who is an honorary Beach Boy, joined the Beach Boys for their set on Saturday. It was a full circle moment that was the result of a fantastic long-running social media campaign started by the Riot Fest founders 12 years ago to bring the actor and musician to the festival, along with his fictional Full House band, Jesse and the Rippers. Now, while Jesse and the Rippers were no shows, Stamos not only backed the Beach Boys on drums, but joined pop group Hanson on stage for a fun performance of their hit tune, MMM Bop. On Friday, the festival kept things light by having Weird Al Yankovic headline his own Weird World stage with a full set of opening acts, including Max Sabbath, Puddle's Pity Party, and Sparks. Aside from the killer 20th anniversary lineup, the festival experience included Riotland Amusement Park, a wedding chapel, and even the chance to have your photo taken with a John Stamos butter statue. "I started Riot Fest in my basement because I wanted to see my favorite bands and celebrate the musicians and venues that make Chicago's scene such a creative juggernaut. Mostly artists with no backing other than their fans and indie labels," said festival founder Riot Mike Petrushin, who told Entertainment Weekly, "And how have we made it 20 years? Well, the hard work of people who love this fest and what it represents as much as I do." The next article, written by Mekashana Pierce, is titled, "Stevie Nicks Shares Letter She Sent Her Parents Before Joining Fleetwood Mac in 1974. She said, "My mom saved it and it's been in a drawer for over 50 years. And this article begins, "Stevie Nicks celebrated the recent re-release of her and Lindsey Buckingham's 1973 album, Buckingham Nicks by taking fans down memory lane. On Monday, the 77-year-old singer shared a letter she sent to her parents while recording the iconic album on Instagram for fans to read. The handwritten note, which was sent on stationery from Sound City Studios in Van Nuys, California, was sent a year before Nicks and Buckingham joined Fleetwood Mac in 1974. She said, "I wanted to share this letter I wrote to my family while Lindsay and I were making Buckingham Nicks. My mom saved it, and it's been in a drawer for over 50 years." In the letter, the singer wrote that she was getting very tired of listening to over 12 hours of music per day, but that she was confident it will pay off in the end. "And when I am sitting in my small but luxurious Beverly Hills home, overlooking my small but tasteful pool that is totally secluded, where I can sun in the nude and tan my entire fat body while waiting for my plastic surgery leg lift, it will all be worth it," Nicks added in her letter. "Otherwise, everything here is just peachy." The then aspiring rock star wrote that she hoped her little family is doing fine and not working too hard before joking that her father, Jess Nicks, was already beautifully tan and lithe. "How sickening that he looks better than I do at 47 and I'm only 25. Now give me a break, Dad," she wrote at the time. She continued, "Speaking of being almost 25, I have decided that we should set aside the entire month of May to celebrate the fact that I am now one quarter of a century old. A new landmark like this should not simply be passed over as yet another birthday, but should include a gala celebration. I shall leave it to the three of you to plan it. And by the way, presents will be accepted any time after the 1st of May. No CODs, please," she wrote, of her then upcoming birthday, which falls on May 26th. Before saying goodbye, Nicks told her family she wished you could be here to hear some of this stuff. "And by the way, Dad and Chris, that rock and roll tune that you both liked called Baby Baby Don't Treat Me So Bad with the fancy guitar work is almost finished, and Lindsay might go down in history as one of the greats in guitar playing. It really is amazing," she wrote, referencing an early cut of what would become the Buckingham Nicks track, Don't Let Me Down Again. Nicks concluded by sending more love to her family and asking that they hold good thoughts about this thing. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Judy with Entertainment Weekly. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.